Tony Martin, I don't know whether I've met Tony Martin along the way. If I did, it would have been about in Melbourne back in about 1991. If I didn't, I just haven't. I like Tony Martin. One of the advantages, Abe, as you know, you'd be good as a comedian. You've got an interesting comedic face. If you look really straight, I mean as in Clark Kenty, and you tell a joke, people think, no, that's not working. So Tony Martin's got this interesting face, right? Like designed by a committee, a benevolent committee. And he's written a book called A Nest of Occasional. In fact, he's written a number of other books. We only got the book this morning, so my grasp of it is sort of how many pages there are there, and I looked in the back to see if my name was there. We do that in this business, and it wasn't. Despite that, I'm going to talk to Tony Martin. Hello, Tony. You there, Tony? Oh, hold on. Hybrid 2. Thanks so much, Abe. What is wrong with you? No, you didn't. Hybrid 1 I want. Just a sec. There you are. Sorry, Tony. It's just a technical problem.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, yes. It's his first week.
I was on your show in Sydney in the mid-90s, I think, in some context.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yes. Anyway, I'm a fan of yours, and I hope that, you know, if that doesn't help you in your career, you can just deny all denial knowledge.
No, that's every little bit helps, Clive.
Yeah, now, let me dart around the place, right? I don't get why Get This was dispensed with. I just thought it was terrific radio. Can you explain to me, honestly now, without fear of provocation by anyone's solicitors, as to why Get This, which you did on the mms those years ago, was dispensed with?
Well, we sort of had a different sort of view of what we wanted to do than what the station did. We were sort of going for, I guess what we were aiming for was listeners. And that really wasn't sort of what Triple M were after at that time. They were pursuing a different policy.
Well, but that was their tax loss policy at the time, was it?
I don't know. Grant Dobson had some crazy idea that...
He's a lovely guy, though, isn't
if
he?
If we could drive it down into zeros, I don't know, maybe some money could be saved. Perhaps if there was no one listening, then it would be less expensive. I'm not sure. I could never grasp quite what his thinking was.
Were you angry about the termination?
I was pretty angry, but not as angry as the listeners were, who kept marching on the station, and it was sort of like a scene from Reds or something. We were kind of swept up in this revolution, which continues to this day. I think it's now, what, two years and That's 3 months yeah. since it was off, and it was last week the podcast was still at number 15 on iTunes.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Higher than all of the Triple M current podcasts.
And you say that without malice, of course.
It's
funny you should mention that. When I go on my trips out in the country, I have a CD, two CDs with all your Get This's on.
Really?
And I play them at the time you used to go to air.
That's it's amazing because someone has then, there's 163 podcasts, and people will just shout at me from a bus shelter. A guy will just be listening to an iPod, and he'll go, up to number 84. And he'll never explain what he means, but, you know, we both know what he means.
Yeah, anyway, it worked well. I think Triple M, like a lot of stations and political parties, sort of lost their way a bit, lost their compass. It does happen. You can't afford to be cocky in this business, can you?
Well, to be seriously, we were told a number of things. We were told two contradictory kind of things at the time, but one of them was that we were bringing in a huge audience, but it wasn't the audience that the station wanted.
Well, couldn't the station have adjusted?
Well, that was our approach.
Yes, I'm sure. But you mentioned Mr. Dobson. I find him a very likeable man, so there's no reflection on him, but it must be hard to run one of these stations. Now,
into the ground.
Oh, we've gone to the mean department here. Hey, would you edit that out before it goes to air?
You've obviously met a completely different guy, Dobson, than the one I work for.
No, he's editing this bit out before it goes to air.
I can tell you a great story that not many people know about Guy Dobson, if you would like.
Okay.
In 1995, myself and Mick Malloy started doing a show called Martin Malloy. And we went into what was then Fox FM in Melbourne to do a pilot for the show. It was 10:30 on a Tuesday morning. And we went into what was called the off-air studio. So it's the studio, you know, you always have a spare one, the one that's not being used. And Guy Dobson was the guy who the station gave us to panel the show. And so he was, you know, sitting there, you know, pushing the buttons while we went through our routines. And every time we'd go to a song in this pilot that wasn't going to air, he'd go, guys, I'm not hearing any gags. Where are the gags, guys? This is just, you're just talking. And we're going, well, that's sort of the approach. We sort of talk subjects through and we find what the funny thing is.
Yeah.
And so we kept doing it. And I'd be talking and he'd be pointing at Mick, going, like, you should be saying something now, or tighten it up, or wind it up, giving us all these crazy semaphore gestures. And we got to the end of it. And we all take our headphones off, and he just looks at us like we've just dropped the biggest lemon of all time, and he goes, well, guys, I mean, I just don't think this is your bag. And, you know, well done for having a crack. But, you know, good luck with whatever it is you try to do next.
And, of course, years later, he was right.
Years later. I remember walking out of the studio like the sad Charlie Brown cartoon. Like, oh, no, what a disaster. And as we were walking out, we saw Peter Grace. I don't know if you would know this name, Clive, but he was the first man to ever speak on commercial radio in Australia, Peter Grace. He was on Eon FM back in 1980. He was like the Bruce Gyngell. Yeah. And he also worked as a stand-up comedian. And we went, if we can get that guy, then, you know, the show will be fine. And he ended up producing the show for 4 years.
Yeah, well, it worked well, and you should feel very pleased with that. It's interesting we use the word comedians. I wonder whether you object to that, because it seems then that that's all that people think you are, and prod, be funny, prod, be funny. Do you find that a problem or not?
I'm one of these people who likes to write things out first and spend... I mean, Martin Molloy, the show we were just talking about, we would get in 10 hours before the show went to air and spent ages crafting conversations that when we did them would sound like we just made them up off the top of our heads.
That was the art, though, wasn't it? That was the art.
Sort of burying it, and you'd get into a cab and people would go, well, what do you do for the other 22 hours of the day? Thinking that, you know, we just show up. And I take that as a compliment, because that was what you don't want to sound like too much hard work. That's not fun to listen to. But, yeah, I guess... I mean, I know some people who are hilarious all the time, but I guess I'm someone who likes to think about what I'm going to say first.
Yeah, it's interesting on the subject, having worked at a number of stations myself, the number of people are funnier off air, and you feel like saying, why don't you just invert your life? Isn't it odd?
There's a lot of people like that who, when they feel no pressure at all, can be funny, and once they get in and the light's on, they tense up. And often you do find the best bits of radio, and I find this, I actually experienced this when I was being interviewed by you in the mid-90s, and I've always said that you're probably my favourite interviewer, because you can get to that point where you forget you're on radio.
That's the magic of radio, isn't it?
And it's like you've taken the trainer wheels off a bike haven't realised. And there was a lot of that on Get This, where me and Ed and Richard would be talking and we'd be so into it that we'd get to the song and we'd go, hang on, that was going to air. It's hard to do. It's like it's a hypnosis kind of exercise. Yeah.
You weren't sharing any cigarettes, were you?
No, not at that time of the day.
Oh, I understand. But just finally on the subject of the media, and possibly a lot of people might not be interested in this, but isn't it interesting, if you were to become a surgeon, you have to do the course and you have to pass the courses and you get a certificate and the legal people make sure you don't kill too many people. But in this business, it seems like anyone can get a position anywhere. There's no regulation, there's no requirements, and putting aside those awful university courses where they learn all the wrong things to do. It's amazing anyone ever does well in this business at all. It's just sort of, you're on your own, aren't you?
People just sort of blunder in, and you need to be able to, I guess, perfect what you're doing off-Broadway. And I had a bit of that in New Zealand. I started writing radio ads, and that was, although in many ways it could be considered a contemptible occupation, it's a great discipline for editing yourself. You have to get everything into 29 and a half seconds, and it's actually a very useful skill to have. And I would that was my official job, was writing ads, but I got to do my own voices in the ads, so that was a training of a sort. And then I would voluntarily do midnight to dawn shift just for the fun of it. And so I got to learn a lot of radio stuff when no one was listening. It's people who get hired, maybe a sportsman or a comedian who's been hired on a big contract but hasn't, you know, done many hours, and they have to learn it in front of everyone. They're the people I feel sorry for.
Yes, they're misled, aren't they? Let's get to the writing bit. How important is the writing bit for you? Is it just a dalliance? Is it a hobby? Is it the real thing?
It's always been about writing for me. Everything I've done has been about writing, but I'd never actually written a book till I turned 40, and thank you very much for saying I've written a lot of other books. I've only actually written two, Clive, but
why would you say that? Why wouldn't you go with it? What is wrong with you?
That's terrible, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It's appallingly Brechtian of me. I'm sorry about that. It's unnecessary. But it was. But I just wouldn't want to sound like I'm claiming to be more.
You're
of
still
an
doing it. You're still doing it. I can't believe this. This will never get to air, eh? Will it?
Well, I do feel slightly, you know, I do. I occasionally have to be photographed with other authors, and they're so serious that they've written so many books, I do feel a bit fraudulent. I remember when Mick Malloy and myself were going around to funding bodies trying to get money to raise films, we would say we felt like Gavin Wood and Jeff Cox trying to hang our paintings in the Louvre. It was like, what are these radio announcers doing here? So I still do feel a little self-conscious about referring to myself as an author.
Well, you're an author, technically, because you've written a couple of books. A Nest of Occasionals, great title. Great. I would look at that and think, that's interesting. And Tony Martin, I think, is that the singer? Is he still alive? You know, you go through the usual things.
He is still alive, is by he? The way. Sid Charisse, his wife of some 60 years, just died recently, but Tony Martin just refuses to go away.
Did you ever interview him, did you?
I never did, but...
One would.
I'm occasionally confused, obviously, with the other Australian Tony Martin, the actor who was... I once was watching morning television and... I saw Richard Wilkins announce, not that I died, like he's known for, but announced that I was starring in a new film with Hugo Weaving called The Interview, and I went, has nobody told me about
it? There'd be a book in that, wouldn't there, Tony?
I hope so.
It's your third book.
Could be, right. Nest, you must know that, you must be, you have to be of a certain age, I think, Clive, to know what the phrase a nest of occasionals is referring to. And it refers to a series of increasingly smaller coffee tables that you might have in your house.
Oh, that's right. I remember those. And you weren't allowed to sit on them.
No. They were too good, and they would all have to be returned to the nest at the end of the day.
In the right order. So the book, for those that don't understand any of this stuff, what's the book about? It's about you and life?
Well, I did one years ago called Lolly Scramble, and it wasn't a massive seller at the time, but it's just kept selling. It's into its fifth printing. So
that's
this
great.
Is more of the same style, which is true stories from my life, but nothing to do with show business. There's no name dropping or anything, because I don't know. I imagine that you would have you done some sort of autobiography?
It's funny. I've been working on a book for about 15, 20 years called War and No Peace, and I find the new generation don't get the joke. They say war and what's this about a war? I said no, it's war and no peace. Oh, they don't know about war and peace. So I'm just wondering whether the title's ruined. But I've done six chapters and I've given up.
Well, but do you find that when you're mentioning, say, famous people or people who are well-known celebrities, that you can't really tell the truth? You have to tone everything down.
Oh, I think so. You should also make it entertaining.
That's right. So I've sort of gone, well, I don't want to do a book like that. So I want to do true, you know, things that are warts and all, and especially about myself. So they're all stories from real life. They're feuds with landlords, amateur theatre plays that I've ruined, family squabbles, things like that. Things where I can change the names and be honest about people.
Yeah, well, you've got to live with yourself ultimately, and you don't want to keep looking out your window at 3 a.m. So who's this for, A Nest of Occasionals? Who would you say it was for?
Well, it's pretty much for anyone. It's certainly for people from both New Zealand and Australia. Like the first book, the first half is stories from New Zealand, and the second half is stories from Australia. And hopefully they're funny stories that anyone can relate to. They're not stories about show business. They're about sort of everyday life.
They're Seinfeldian, are they?
They are. Well, it's a book that I loved when I was younger. It was a book called Unreliable Memoirs by Clive James.
I reviewed that. One of the few books I've reviewed. I know it well.
Well, we didn't know who Clive James was in New Zealand, but I remember reading, I just loved the name, and I bought the book because of the title, and I was going, there were stories about rolling Jaffas down the aisle at
the
cinema.
I remember that,
I remember the great story about the go-kart race, you know, with a snake made of 40 go-karts going down the hill and whipping around the corner and the person on the end of the snake flying through there. I mean, I remember reading that and constantly looking at the cover going, is this guy... are you sure he's from, you know, Australia? This sounds very much like New Zealand stuff to me.
Yes, you know his first name, what it really is, do you?
What?
Vivian.
Is it really?
Yes, what were the parents thinking? I mean, if you don't like your child, sell it on eBay or something, but don't punish the child.
So you're an authentic Clive?
Yes, he changed it to Clive, to which I said, I don't like my name. I said, why would you call yourself Clive? He said, because it was Vivian. I said, good point. All right, we have to rush off. What are you doing else? So the book is A Nest of Occasionals. Tony Martin recommended for anyone. Picador are the people that produce it. Out now, blue thing with a big thing, bird with big legs. What are you doing in television? Anywhere we can see, or radio? Are you doing anything we can watch?
I'm going to be working with friends of mine, make a show called The Librarian, which goes out on the ABC, and I'm going to be doing a bit of work on that this year. But apart from that, I just make a series of kind of Where's Wally-ish appearances on TV. You just never know where I'm going to pop up.
But you end up being the bridesmaid again, don't you? That's the trouble, isn't it?
Well, that's, So there's not all the pressure if you're just doing a guest spot.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
That's what I find.
Okay. Well, Tony, it's great to talk with you. Next time you're in town, you've got a few minutes, we might like to see you in person.
I'd love to. Thanks, Clive.
Thank you. Tony Martin, A Nest of Occasionals is the title of the book. It's a lovely book, and you could read that if you're staying in a motel, say, for 3 days, I would think, minimum 3 days. I always relate books to how long you're in a motel, because it's good to go away and read these things. And there you are, Tony Martin. Lovely guy, isn't he? And he makes people laugh, and that's important. 28 and a half minutes to four on 2UE.